Good morning and welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I had a cancellation this week with a guest, and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and do this solo episode because many of you don't know this, but I get up really early in the morning. I'm usually up by 4 a.m., thanks to my kittens. And I love to work out at that time. I love to study with my teachers in India a few mornings a week. I'm currently studying all four chapters of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, word by word, and really going in deeply. So I want to share some of that with you. And I also work for Polyvagal Institute. And there are several mornings a month that I need to be up to meet with international students starting at 6 a.m. So the good news is I'm a very much a morning person. And the other good news is I've had this convergence of studying with my teachers in India and looking at the Yoga Sutra and then getting all this neuroscience from Polyvagal Institute. And I just had them smash together this week unexpectedly. They're not like following the same train tracks, right? But there are so many things that converge with modern neuroscience, quantum physics, that go all the way back to the ancient teachings. So I just wanted to share some of my little aha moments this past week as I studied both of these fields that I love so deeply.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm Amy Wheeler, your host. Are you needing to earn some continuing education units? Well, we have the exact thing for you. Every single Monday night, we have a Monday night clinic where we practice postures, breathing, and meditation towards a very specific theme of the month. And then we stay afterwards and we talk about the theory of why we chose what we did for that particular practice. We give you a completion certificate, which you can turn into your continuing education body. And we're growing all the time. We have a wonderful community. You can do this live with us online, or you can do it through a recording. Go to www.theoptimalstate.com and check out the Monday Night Clinic, and we would love to see you there.
All right, so let me just tell you a very brief overview of where we're at with the Yoga Sutra. I'm with my teachers, we're all the way back at chapter 1, verse 23. And up to this point, we've been talking about yoga is citta vritti nirodha. Yoga is the cessation of the thoughts of the mind that eventually gives rise to at least two levels of samadhi. Samadhi being sama, to balance, dhi, me, I am in balance, my gunas are in balance, right? So basically, the levels of samadhi, they start from a place where you don't have quite as much clarity, even though you're feeling amazing and expansive and spacious and light, you still are lacking clarity. And then as you refine yourself over time, because you haven't gotten too attached to the fact that you've gotten a certain level of samadhi and you're exploiting that. If you can refrain from that, you can continue in a humble way to get a little bit more refinement and clarity and even closer to a very, very sattvic mind. So, where we're at is that there are some people that are kind of born with this level of stability, this level of clarity. It's not most of us, but there are people out there. And we could probably explain that in neuroscience in a few minutes, but I don't want to go there yet. But the rest of us, we kind of have to work at it. We have to put in effort. We have to do daily sadhana, daily practice. We have to try to calm and soothe our minds, try to stay clear, try to keep our minds balance. We have to protect our minds, which is so important now more than ever to protect your mind. It is your gift. Do not let the news, do not let all of it take your precious mind from you. You're going to need it. So let's really think about how we can protect our mind and then not get attached. Let go of the things that no longer serve us. right? And you may think, oh, well, that sounds selfish. It's not selfish. To protect your own mind and let go of the things that no longer serve you prepares you so you can actually be of service to humanity. It is the prerequisite. We can't add anything from a place of complete exhaustion. We can't do goodness in the world and be benevolent from a place of so much excitement or so much anger or so much sadness. Even though we may have those feelings, when we step up to the plate to actually act and think and do things, we want to be more balanced as much as we possibly can. So for most of us, we have to work on that. We have to do our daily practice and then let go, daily practice, let go, daily practice, let go. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is that prior to all of the eight limbs of yoga, where we're treating one another well and we're doing our daily disciplines and we're doing some postures and some breath work, and eventually we're drawing our senses inward and moving towards a state of meditation, right? That's all the daily practices that we're doing. But prior to Patanjali telling us all of those things in chapter two, Patanjali starts all the way in chapter one, and this is where I'm at, 123, talking about this concept called Ishvara, and eventually Ishvara Pranidhana. And what I'm learning, it's so funny, I always learned that it was an option, like, hey, you know, this is a really great way to go, but if you don't want to go this way, you have all these other yoga tools you can use. Now, as we're relearning it 6, 7, 8, 9 times with the Yoga Sutra, now this sutra goes from being Raja Yoga, the king of yoga, the yoga of the mind and knowledge, to Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of the heart mind. And so now we're learning it from this perspective where Ishvara is a prerequisite to all the other tools of yoga. And Ishvara and Ishvara Pranidhana is mentioned multiple times throughout the text. There are 10 sutras pertaining to Ishvara Pranidhana, even if it's not mentioned directly, it's indirectly. So you know, like, oh, this is a big, big deal. And so even though Patanjali is giving us this Ishvara as a choice, when you really look deeper into the text, it's really something we should all consider. So let's define Ishvara in Sutras 124 to 126. Basically, Yoga Sutra does not mandate Hindu beliefs with Ishvara. This is coming straight from my teachers who are Indian. And that Ishvara in multiple different contexts, like Sankhya versus, you know, Vedanta, like, it means different things. So we're going to look at what does it mean in the Yoga Sutra. So Ishvara, Ish, the root word of Ish is mastery, control, the capacity to rule. Varat or Varak is that which possesses the character to be able to control and to master oneself. So Ishvara is the entity, the being that has the character to master oneself. That's interesting. Doesn't say that we actually are mastering, but has the character to master. And then when we break down pranidhana, basically it means to hold or sustain. Nidhana means a place of safety. A place of safety where you can place something, you can deposit something. So pranidhana means the act of being supremely safe, to be assured. Now, that is so interesting because that is where we tie over to neuroscience in a few minutes. That's where we get into Bahali vagal theory. I'm like, wow. So all this time I learned Ishvara Pranidhana means I have to learn to surrender, which frankly has been quite hard for me. I'm not very good at that one. I don't even know what it means. Those words just kind of bounce off my ears. But when I think of it as I'm going to be held, sustained, and supremely safe, wow, that changes it. Now when I look at Ishvara Pranidhana, I can say that which makes me safe, that which holds me, can I let go into that? Well, yes, that's way easier than just kind of letting go for the heck of letting go. So, you know, when we look at this concept of Ishvara in the Upanishads, we are asked questions like, what role do I play in the universe? What is my role? Why am I here? Knowing that the universe is so big and so expansive, I can't claim ownership for anything. I can't claim ownership for even my actions, my good actions, or, you know, I do have to take responsibility for my not so great actions. But really, the idea of being in control is a joke when you look at the whole universe. And in the Upanishads, it says the universe belongs to someone else, not to you. So it belongs to Ishvara. And therefore, how do I even engage with this universe? And so we have to break it down. And how do we enjoy this life, this human experience, but also know that it doesn't belong to me? I may even be a steward of some of what's happening in my life, but the magnificence of the universe that I'm part of, I have no business claiming ownership of even a grain of sand. I haven't created any of it. I can't control any of it. And it's interesting because we humans have put ourselves at the top of the stack in this universe. We feel we are the highest, the most important, that everything should serve humans. And that isn't how Mother Nature works, as we know, as we're seeing. We are not at the apex. We're not at the peak. It's supposed to be symbiotic, where there's giving and receiving, and everything is part of a whole. That is the baseline. So to come in and think we control things, that we have ownership of things, is actually anti what we're trying to do here in yoga. However, why are we here? What are we going to do then? We can't just say, well, it's such a big world out there. It's such a big universe. There's nothing I can do. I can't add anything to the drop. My little drop can't add anything to the ocean. We're here to fulfill the pathway, the blueprint, the gifts that were given to us when we were born, as well as the challenges. Using the resources that I need to survive. Doesn't say the resources I need to have a Bentley car and the most beautiful home. And no, using the resources I need to survive, full stop. We are over consuming, right? So that's a big one for me. Like, okay, how do I fulfill my life purpose using what I need to survive? And here's the kicker, not possessing any of it, not possessing anything. Stewardship, not ownership. This is the attitude that we need to live with. And this is the attitude of Ishvara Pranidhana. So when you hear Ishvara Pranidhana means to surrender, that really never resonated with me. Surrender to what? But when I hear this, that I'm going to do my best every single day with the resources I have and basically try not to create ownership over it, and I'm just a tiny little speck in the whole universe, and basically I'll do my little part, but I'm going to cherish this experience and let it go, that I can do. I can surrender to something that is much larger, which is the order of the cosmos that I'm part of. Now, I know this cosmos will function just fine with or without me. It doesn't matter if I'm here. Sounds sad, but it's true. Some of you may miss me. But basically, it doesn't matter if I'm here or not. But while I'm here, I'm going to do as much good and add as much sweetness and kindness to this life as I possibly can for those around me. So let's talk about this order of the universe, because when you really think of the expansiveness of it and realize you're just a tiny speck, it somehow becomes easier to not get so caught up in controlling and mastering. Because remember, the master, the controller, the one pulling the strings is not you, it's not me, it's Ishvara. And so what is this cosmic schema or blueprint that's already in place that we call Ishvara? You could define Ishvara this way. It is the highest intelligence of the universe. It is like AI on steroids. It knows everything all the time. It has physical and biological laws of sound and light and physics and quantum physics. There's a physiological order inside of us as humans. And how it is that our bodies work. What are the underpinnings of life force or prana that is inside of us? Ishvara is also the psychological order, the emotions, the memories, the patterns, the conditioning, and the cognitive order, knowledge, reason, memory, learning, and the order of dharma and karma. We want to survive. We want to be well. We want to have morals. We want to have freedom. And we have the ability to pursue spiritual liberation, right? So if you look at all of those orders, the highest knowledge, the biological, physical, physiological, psychological, cognitive, dharma, karma, if you look at all that, you can align yourself with that. But if you want to separate yourself from that, if you want to say, I'm special, I'm different, I don't fall in this order, I'm kind of outside of the universe and none of this applies to me because I'm special, that is enhancing our individual ego and it's out of alignment with the cosmic order. And so the more that I can align myself with the order, that's me submitting to Ishvara Pranidhana. Because we see this order is so much larger than us. Now, some of you know my favorite chant is Purnamida, and I want to chant it for a minute. I'm not great at chanting, but I love this chant. For those of you that are watching this on YouTube, I'm going to put this chant on the screen, and then I'm going to tell you what it means after I chant it. Purnamida, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. All right, why is that my favorite chant? I've always loved it. I just love how it sounds. But what the Purnamida chant is saying is that I am not able to take anything from the source. That all expansive cosmic order that I just talked to you about, I can't lessen it. I can't reduce it. I can't take it as my own. The only thing I can do is align with the highest intelligence. The only thing I can do is align with the physical and biological laws, the physiological order inside of me, the psychological order. I can only align. And even if I wanted to, I couldn't separate myself from this cosmic order. There's no way to separate ourselves. The only way to separate ourselves is in our mind to start thinking of individualism. In our mind to start thinking of the I, me, mine complex, the ownership, the possessiveness, the I have to build it up for only me and keep it for myself. We're not actually separated from the cosmic intelligence at that point, but we think we are, and that's suffering. We're only separated from Ishvara and from the cosmos in our own mind. And this chant is reminding us that nothing can touch the wholeness of Ishvara. Nothing. We can think we're separate. We can try to possess things and build things up and take ownership for them. But it actually isn't true. It's just us doing that in our mind. And we know that builds ahankara. That builds the ego identification And that is the road to suffering.
My name is Amy Wheeler. I'm the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour, but also the creator of a mobile app that's based on the gunas of yoga and Ayurveda. It's the first of a kind, and we'd love for you to try it for free. The app is called The Optimal State, and it tracks the state of your gunas, and then it gives you therapeutic interventions. Now we're starting to add Dharma Talks as well as Yoga Nidra. And we think these are wonderful ways that you can do some self-care and take care of yourself on a regular basis. So come join us, the Optimal State app. We'd love to see you over there too.
So the only thing I really have control over is my attitude and how I can align myself with this order, try to suffer less by letting go into this order. And some of you are suffering the last few months, wondering, like, you can't just give up, you can't let go, you can't not do anything. I'm not saying that. You have resources, you have your blueprint for this life, there are things you are here to do. But it's very targeted, it's very specific. There's things that only you can do, and it might be on a local level, it might be with your family, it might be the work that you're already doing, that you need to protect your mind and stay focused on your little drop of water in the ocean, and know that that's enough, and know that you can surrender into that. Ishvara Pranidhana. Nobody can make you suffering. You are suffering when you take yourself out of this cosmic schema. When you try to take too much control, when you try to be the master of the universe, when you try to put yourself in a position of ownership, possessiveness, I have to have it my way, that is what causes the suffering. What if we took a step back? What if we said, with this body, in this moment, what goodness can I do? What benevolence can I bring to the world? What sweetness can I add to the world? How can I protect my mind? And also, how can I chant Purnamida, remembering the wholeness has always been there. It's there right now, and it will be there forever. Frankly, I hate to tell us this. I know it's sad to hear, but really nothing you or I do individually is going to do much. The only thing we can do is maybe use our resources to support and mobilize other people. But, you know, us as a human being, there may not be much we can do besides love our families, care for our neighbors, hand out food at homeless shelters, donate, be part of important causes, even locally. It matters. We don't get to sit back and do nothing. We don't just get to throw up our hands and go in a cave. That's not what we're saying. We're saying do what you can with the resources you have and take care of yourself, protect your mind, and trust that this cosmic order has lasted throughout all of time. It's been there. You don't have control over it anyway. So relax into that. Allow Ishvara to hold you. Allow Ishvara to sustain you. Allow Ishvara to help you protect your mind and be with that which is safe. And I know so many people out there are like, well, wait a minute, I'm not safe. I'm not being held. What are you talking about? This is a horrible situation I'm in. And it is. It is. It 100% is. And feeding our minds with fear and anger and sadness 24/7 is not going to help. It's just not. Get focused. Figure out what you can do. Protect your mind. Take care of your loved ones. Do that and see if you don't feel better more of the time, adding more to the scale of goodness, more to the scale of benevolence. I don't think being angry and screaming at people, it may feel good in the moment and it may help us release some emotions that needed to be released, but in the long run, it's not going to change the trajectory. We have to get serious now about how do we allow the devas as opposed to the asuras. The asuras are the bad guys. How do we let the light? Deva is light. How do we let the light shine through me so that I can contribute to more light in the world. So basically what we're saying is that Ishvara is the intelligence, the source, the past, the present, the future. Ishvara establishes all the laws of physics and quantum physics and biology and chemistry. Ishvara is the entire universe out there, but also on a microcosm, the universe inside of me. Ishvara has been here forever, long before you, and will be here long after you came. So if you can stay connected to that, this is being in the state of Ishvara Pranidhana, is telling yourself, I'm such a tiny speck in this great big world, and what I'm doing matters. My little speck actually matters. I need to keep my health, protect my mind, take care of those people who love me, and that's my contribution to this great big world. You are not, I am not the center of the universe. We have to remember, we don't have entitlement. We're not superior as human beings. This promotes the degeneration of that connection to Ishvara, as I just chanted. The only way we disconnect from this schema of the universe is in our own mind. As long as we remember, I am part of this, I am held, I am sustained, my mind is safe, I am love, that is going to take you where you need to go. And I say that even with the knowledge that we're maybe losing our jobs, we could be losing our homes, our families are not safe, I will still argue that doing the best to protect your mind and stay connected to source is a better place to be when we go through these struggles together. Hard to do, but I'm challenging us, all of us, those who are directly suffering and those who are watching their loved ones suffer and those who feel they have a little more power and privilege and they're terrified and they also are upset. And so, you know, they're suffering. All of us need to get our head around what I'm talking about today, wherever we're at on that continuum. And it will be harder for some than others. And it doesn't mean go get another massage. I have to stay in balance. It doesn't mean I have to get to the gym every day for 45 minutes. I'm talking about an internal strength and power. I'm talking about remembering how small you are and how great you are at the same time. I'm talking to you about sublimating your own ego and remembering you're not the center of the universe. And no matter what you do, it may have a little effect to those people that you love, but what is the place that you're doing that from? Is it from a place of excitement, anger, agitation? Is it from a place of lethargy, sadness? Try to do it from a place of, I want to show up the best version of myself. And that's hard. You may think, oh, that's spiritually bypassing. No, it's not. To actually do your practice every day, Abhyasa Vairagyam, to do a daily sadhana every single day, that is hard work so you can show up as your best self. I think a lot of us talk a lot about daily sadhana, but do we actually do it? So it all comes back to what are you holding in your mind? If you want to be a powerful person, what can you do from a state of a balanced mind? We all know what powerful people who have very disturbed minds can do. We see the destruction that can happen when people in positions of power have very disturbed mind and they're disconnected from source. When they have ownership, when they have possession, when they have greed, we see that. We don't want to become that. So what do we need to do to get our minds back on track to bring the light? Not in a spiritually bypassing way, because this is going to be hard work. What are we going to do to make people feel held, sustained, and safe in our presence? That's our job now. Now, how do we connect this with polyvagal theory, with neuroscience? How do we align ourselves with the laws of the universe? And we can see it playing out specifically through our nervous system. So I was doing some studies with Tracy Stoniker this week, and she started off her lecture saying, we have an enduring lifelong quest to feel safe. I'm going to say that again. It's so profound. We have an enduring lifelong quest to feel safe. Wow, when I heard that, and I had just been hearing about Ishvara Pranidhana and how Ishvara and surrendering to Ishvara means to be held, to be sustained, to be safe, I was like, wow, this is a really interesting connection. So Tracy was talking to us about when we have a sense of safety within, and we're going to go into that in a few minutes, we feel more openness, we feel more connected to one another, and we feel ready to participate. And I just want to point that out, that when we feel safe, we're open, ready to participate, and connected. When we feel fear, when we feel disconnected, when we feel agitated, angry, we are not open. We don't feel connected, and we're not ready to participate. So all the times that I've spent being angry about things, instead of saying, okay, I want to feel safe so that I can participate and make a difference, that's profound. That's a shift of mindset. Can you honestly say that you're on the lifelong quest to feel a sense of safety and that you're ready to be open and participate and connect because you feel safe? And what are you going to do from that place? So what does a sense of felt safety feel like in your body? This is where yoga comes in. How do we feel safe in our own body, mind, and spirit almost every day through our daily practice, through our daily sadhana, where we get ourselves into that place where we're in the parasympathetic nervous system, we're able to relax, we don't feel buzzy, we don't feel like we're, you know, plugged into a light socket, we're not waking up at 2:30 every morning, we're not having to exercise heavily to release all the stress, right? There's a sense of safety within where you feel grounded and centered and calm. And can we use our daily practice to get a little bit closer to that every day? And I use daily practice loosely because for me that could be postures, it could be breath work, it could be meditation. Some days for me, that's the swimming pool. And, you know, the swimming pool is what does it for me. So another really interesting thing that Tracy was talking about is that what is inside of me, my nervous system, your nervous system, is fine-tuned to my habitual patterns. There are external events out there happening. There's no doubt about that. But how is my nervous system interacting with those external events? I can't exactly change the external events, but I can change how my nervous system is functioning so that I'm feeling more open, more safe, more connected, more like participating. So I can change myself through my daily sadhana, which then intersects with the external world. Interesting. Right? That I don't have a direct impact on the external world. I can't scream from the mountaintops and change the world because I don't have that much power. But I can interact. The new version of me, the better version of me, the one that I want to show up, can interact. And through my presence and my way of being, now I am interacting with the external world. And that makes a difference. And that's really all I can do, is show up in a balanced state as much as possible with love in my heart, with benevolence, with goodness, and that is my job. That's about all I'm going to be able to do as a normal person in society without a ton of power. And you may say, yeah, but that's not enough. And I would say, and Yoga Sutra would say, that's all there is. You are the microcosm of the macrocosm. How did our society get to where it is today? Tell me that. I'm just going to let you sit with that for a minute. How did we get here? Enough people had certain ideas in their mind that the seesaw tipped. How do we tip it back? Enough people have to get their minds back in order. They have to protect their minds. And you're part of that equation. Take it back. Take it back with yourself, your partner, your loved ones, your kids, your family, your colleagues, your coworkers, your community, your PTA, your church, your people at the gym. Take it back. Take your minds back. That's the only way forward. And yoga helps us to do that. We're so lucky that we have found yoga. So let's go back to what it means. Sense of safety. Ishvara Pranidhana. Same thing. We can call it whatever we want. So beautiful. I'm just thrilled to hear Ishvara defined as to hold, to sustain, to feel safe, right? And then to hear Polyvagal say, oh, the lifelong quest to feel safe. So let's talk about how it happens, because yoga and neuroscience both say the same thing. There is something called neuroception. And neuroception is basically this little voice inside of you that you're probably unaware of that is continuously asking, am I safe? Do I belong? Am I being seen? Am I being heard? Am I being understood? Am I being supported? Do they like me? So there's this little thing inside you that says, I want to be safe and I need to be part of a community, because throughout all of time in history, if you weren't part of the community, you weren't safe. That's when people knew that they were a part of the whole. Now, when we accumulate so many resources, we can separate ourselves from other human beings. We can separate ourselves from the whole. And that's what I was talking about earlier. You are not separate. Even if you think you are, you're not separate. Pur Namida. No one is separate. They are only separate in their own mind. So when we look at neuroception, we're talking about these tiny, tiny bits of information that are precog, right? You're not thinking, but your nervous system is feeling tiny bits of information before you have any awareness that you're even collecting these little bits of information. So you might be introduced to a new person and you're talking on the phone and you just hear that little strange thing in their voice and you don't even know what that is. You can't articulate it, but you heard something and then you just kind of brush it away like, oh, well, whatever. And then you get together and you've got a strange feeling. You're like, I don't know. This doesn't actually feel easeful to me. I don't know why, but I don't feel safe. And again, you're not even aware of that. You're not even thinking that. Some of you may be, but a lot of people are not even tuned into that level. And maybe you see a little twitch of how the mouth is, that if you were to look it up in face reading books, that would be a look of contempt. Or, wow, I think they checked out halfway through the meal. A lot of us don't want to admit this precog stuff to ourselves, this neuroception, but it's there and we know it. And when we get enough little bits of neuroceptive information, little data bits, boom, now it becomes cognitive. Now we can think, oh gosh, here's what's happening. But what's interesting is that whole time you're collecting data and you don't even know you're collecting data. You just know that person has a bad vibe, or I don't really like this place. I don't feel at home here. You know, when kids prepare to go to college, their parents have all these glorified things about, you know, what they want for their child to have in college. But the kids go by the vibe. Did I feel good at that college? Did they feel accepted? Did they belong? Could they see themselves there? That's all based on neuroception. Now, another really interesting thing is that this neuroception can go all the way from a continuum of will I be able to survive, which is extreme lack of safety and fear, to the middle part of the continuum where, okay, I'm starting to feel safe. I think I'm going to survive. I wonder what's going to happen next. I can deal. All the way to this place on the far end of the continuum where we have exquisite beauty and abundance and comfort and ease. So when you're feeling this neuroception, even if you're not aware of it yet, the data that's being collected is on that whole continuum, all the way from lack of safety to this most amazing, exquisite thing. And some of us, to collect the data we need to finally have it become something of a thought where we're aware enough to realize what's happening, some of us need more calm and ease and slowing down. And some of us need more beauty and stimulation and activation in order to gather enough information. So that in itself is really fascinating to me, that when we look at this sense of safety, so what that tells me is that we can enjoy the universe, we can enjoy the gifts of creation, we can enjoy each other, we can have joy as part of our sense of safety. It's not just curling up in our houses with blankets, although I love that one. It's getting to the swimming pool and feeling the water on your skin. It's watching the children in swim lessons laugh the first time they're in the water at 1 year old with their parents bopping them around. Like, those things create a sense of safety inside of us just as much as curling up with the cat in the house on a winter night, right? So think of that your neuroception needs a whole continuum of data coming in to feel safe. Some of you need more activation, pleasantness, wonderful input. Others of you need more closing down, getting quiet. But really, we all need all of it. Just probably the percentages differ, and it's our preference, right? An introvert might prefer the slow, calm, quiet to feel safe. An extrovert might prefer the excitement, fun, joy to feel safe. All right, so now I want to introduce a concept called valence. V-A-L-E-N-C-E, valence. And this is what's called the tipping point. Again, I'm going to use a metaphor of a seesaw. It's a different seesaw than the one I just mentioned. But the seesaw, on one half of the seesaw is safety, and on the other half is not feeling safe. And so valence means that there's a tipping point where I was feeling safe, things were going well, my nervous system was happy, my mind felt good. And then the seesaw changes to, and this is the valence, boom, it switches to the other side. Oh no, I don't feel right here. I don't feel safe. I'm not sure I like this person. Not sure I like this job. That your nervous system kind of senses something and there's a lack of safety suddenly. And so that's due to neuroception, because as I said, you're collecting all these little bits of data and it's a neural process, and the cells of your body, the sensory information is coming in, talking to your cells up through your nervous system until it tells your brain, like, uh-oh, this isn't good. I don't like this, right? So that valence is that tipping point where you felt okay, and then all of a sudden you became aware, like, this is not gonna work for me. So, you know, if we look at neuroception and valence, neuroception is a neurological mechanism that helps us feel safe or unsafe. Now, when I tie that back into the Yoga Sutra and what we talked about in terms of Ishvara and Ishvara Pranidhana, wow, what would it be like if we spent half hour, hour a day connecting to source, connecting to Ishvara, surrendering to the cosmic order, protecting our minds, making our nervous systems feel resilient, calm, clear, alert. What if we did that every day? We would be strengthening, protecting our minds, but strengthening something inside of us too. And that's what we need right now. We need that sense of safety embodied inside each one of us. What the people on whatever team you're against, I don't care who it is, they probably want you to feel unsafe. They want you to feel fear, because you know what? That takes away this internal stability that you're going to need now more than ever. So think about that. Think about when the fear comes from all angles, from the news, from relatives, from whomever. What do you need to do to protect your mind, to feel stable, to feel calm? And then when that tipping point happens that you no longer feel safe, can you bring yourself back? Can you say, okay, I need to do something right now to feel a little bit better? Not for me personally, although that's part of it. Just knowing that you feeling better more of the time is the prerequisite to you contributing to society, right? All right, so one more thing I want to say about valence and this tipping point where you go from feeling okay, I have ease, I feel safe, I'm breathing well, my posture feels good, I'm not in pain, to boom, oh gosh, this isn't good, I don't feel safe. Keep in mind that inside each one of us, we have this internal homeostasis or lack of homeostasis, where we have heart rate, muscle tension, body temperature. Like, there's a whole host of physiological things happening in our body that we're tuning into with this neuroception. We're constantly tuning into, oh, wow, what is happening inside my body on a very subtle level? You're not even aware of it. Also, as part of your neuroception is proprioception, your body in space. How is your body? Is it running into things? Is it falling over? Is it having trouble standing up straight? Like, where are you in space relative to other objects? That too is part of your neuroceptive data collection system. Then you have everything that's outside of you. Your dogs, your cats, your house, your car, your colleagues, everything out there, the news. And then basically your nervous system and mind is going to use all of that to tell you, is it okay to have an embodied sense of safety right now? So why this is so interesting to me is the things that are out there that we have no control over, those are the things we like to scream about. Those are the things we want to put our stake in the sand and say, oh, this is horrible. I'm going to fight for this. I'm going to hurt people over this. And usually it has no impact, honestly. I don't think it has an impact most of the time. Maybe not never, but when we go at it from a place of anger and fire, a lot of times it doesn't actually do anything good. What would happen if we worked on our heart rate? We worked on our body temperature? We worked on our muscle tension? What would happen if we really felt safe within our own space and then approached whatever we want to approach externally from that sense of safety? That's what I think Ishvara Pranidhana means, that I'm going to tune in to the higher cosmic order. I'm going to do my practices to take care of myself so that I can show up. Some days I'm not going to show up very great. Yes, that's true. But can I show up clear, calm, alert, stable, kind? Some days will bring some fire, but can it be from a place of stability, not wanting to burn down the house? What we need now is stable, kind, loving humans who are willing to care for one another. That's what we need right now. Can we get there in your family, in your community? That's the ticket. Can you have Ishvara Pranidhana? I know it's hard. Can you have Ishvara Pranidhana for the order of the universe, the physical laws, the biological laws, the laws of physiology within your own system, the laws of how the mind works, all of it? Can you surrender into that and say, I'm just a drop in the ocean and I'm doing my best? I'm not going to go put a cover over my head and allow myself to be in anxiety and depression and trauma right now. I'm going to show up with my daily practice. That is going to be what sustains me. That is going to be how I protect my mind. So that's all I have to say. It's what I had been learning from my teachers this week and the dots that I'm putting together from Yoga Sutra and neuroscience. I hope I've given you a lot to think about. I've really enjoyed sharing this with you. So thank you for being the outlet from which I can let these thoughts and ideas out from inside of me to you. And I wish you a peaceful week, a week full of clarity, and a week full of taking care of yourself and protecting your mind and your own nervous system. All right. Have a great week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We are really, really blessed to have you all as listeners. We can feel the energy coming back, the gratitude, and we want you to know how much we appreciate you out there in the audience. Every little bit of goodness that we share with you from our guests goes into your ears, down into your heart. I am hopeful that it radiates out into the world. That is the goal. So thank you for being our dependable and reliable listeners. You have no idea how much we appreciate seeing those downloads every single week. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.